This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the story of Alan Rasmussen, who is looking forward to visiting the National World War II Memorial this April with Central Valley Honor Flight, part of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. After serving in World War II, Alan, of course, couldn't wait to get home and see his wife, Millie, and meet their infant son for the first time. But he also had to take care of his discharge, and little did he know what amazing connection was about to be made.
They told me, go back to your draft board when you go home. So I walked down the same office, the same little lady sitting behind the bench. Of course, I go in, big mouth. Hey, I said, you got me in here 2.5 years ago, and now you're going to have to sign me out. She gave me a big smile. Okay. So she pulled some papers out and got her pen in her hand and said, got discharge papers. I laid them on her desk like that. She pulled them over, started to write. She had a big smile on her face. The smile started to go. She said, 71st Infantry? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, 66th Regiment? Yes. 2nd Battalion? I said, yes. She said, you knew the Lieutenant Tarbell? I said, yes, I did. You know he was wounded? Yes. He was hit in the shoulder. You know he died? Yes. He died 3 days later in a field hospital. She picked up the picture on her desk and turned around and said, he was my son.
Gulp.
Gulp. Oh, so we had a little few tears over that one. Anyway, she said, could my husband and I come up and visit with you? We'd like to hear more about what he did and what happened. Because all they did in World War II, we took their, well, I didn't, the grave registration did. They took their wristwatch, they took their rings, they took their billfold, and anything to identify them, they get and put in a little old bag like that and wrote a little letter, sorry to tell you your son was killed. And that they send them that, or take it to them and give it to them at the door. So anyway, they came up, and we had a good talk about it, and I told them how brave he was, and he really was. He was front man off the line. They said, well, why don't you come down to our house sometime and visit? Okay, come down for dinner. Well, another thing was, he was exactly my age within a week. He was a junior at UCLA. I was a junior at Santa Barbara. He made the big mistake. Well, I don't know if it was a mistake or not, but when you first go in, they'll say, who wants to go to Officers Candidate School, OCS? Well, he volunteered for that and became an officer, a second lieutenant. Well, anyway, so we had a real nice dinner, and over in the corner was a big, beautiful piano, big, you know, flat one with a lid that lifts up and all that baloney. My wife played the piano professionally, so she went over to look at the piano. Well, Mrs. Tarbell walked over by the piano, and something seemed to be going on. My mind said, get your butt over there. So I went over there, and she was saying to Millie, my wife, she was saying, I have not played this piano since I got the letter that said my son was killed. I put my arm around her shoulder like that, and I squeezed her out like that. I said, Mrs. Tarbell, play the piano for me. She sat down and started to play the piano. She hadn't played the piano for over a year, and she played the piano. A
few tears, huh?
Yep, tears.
What did that mean to you? I imagine that had to be humbling to realize how unique an opportunity that was, how great the odds were against that coincidence. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't think it was a coincidence.
No, it wasn't. The Lord had me in his hand. I went through things that I don't know how I made it.
Can you share some of those with us?
Well, one thing I'll tell you, in the cowboy pictures, you know, when they shoot, the bullets go and they go zing like that. They don't go zing. They go by you, it's just a snap like that.
How close did they come to you?
I don't know.
Close enough to get your attention?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But they weren't supposed to be shooting us. But you see, when you're shooting, like with a machine gun, I saw more heroic things done by our soldiers. They didn't get any medals. This thing up here got a bronze star on it.
I see your bronze star right there, right below your combat medic badge.
Yeah. This was given to all combat medics. All combat medics were actually in combat, were giving the bronze star. That's what they told me. They didn't come and pin on me or anything like that. Nothing that happened. So I got it.
But in your eyes, there were quite a few men who didn't receive something of that magnitude that deserved it?
Well, let me tell you one story. We were going for the city. There was an old runway between where we were in the woods and the town. And Patton wanted us to take that city and that runway so he could get his gasoline into his tanks. So now a machine gunner, light machine gun, that's the one that has the tube and the holes in it. There's a three-man crew. The guy that shoots the machine gun, the guy that carries the pistol for support and carries ammunition and feeds the belts into the machine gun for him, and a third guy that has buckets of those little rectangular boxes full of bullets. We're getting ready to hit this one city. And I'm standing by these guys. They're hunkered down there, and they got the team. And I heard this guy say, okay, I'm going to run. You damn well better run with me, and if I run out of a belt, you're getting on stuck in there because we're going to get those damn crowds. So I'm standing there watching. I heard the word go. He jumped up. Boy, started firing that darn thing like that right across there. Not aiming anything. He's firing because the more you shoot, they hunker down so you can get across. Well, anyway, they made the cross. The guy was kept putting the belts in. Their belts are over there. I don't know, big long. They fold up inside that can. Now, he should have got a medal. We had one of our medics had glasses about that thick. Big guy, Jewish boy. And there was a guy wounded out there, and we got the orders. We do not have to go out under fire, heavy fire. But the guy did anyway. So the medic went out there, and he bent over, and all of a sudden he went over backwards like that. Guy walked up to me one time. Hey, Doc, I've been hit. Well, come on, you're walking. He said, my legs. I looked down on his legs. Hole, 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 hole. Seven holes in his legs.
Right across his thigh.
Right across. Yeah. What the heck happened to you? Of course, I cut his pants, and I was putting sulfur powder on it, and even no intensity bleeding, just bandaged it up. Well, he said, I walked down that darn street out there, and this crowd stepped around the corner. He had a Schmeisser machine pistol, fires 1,200 rounds a minute. Sounds like ripping a piece of canvas.
The burp gun.
Like that. Yeah, burp gun, huh? Anyway, I said, what'd you do? Took the old M1 up, and I killed him. Okay, that's what you're supposed to do. So I patched him up, and he was not really concerned. It hadn't hit the, you know, you have arteries on the inside of your legs, and the rest of it just didn't hit the bone.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy walked up to me and said, Doc, I've been hit. There's blood running down his forehead. Right away, I said, a head wound, you know, better check it out pretty fast. Well, right across his forehead was just a groove. The skin was gone. You could see the skull, but it hadn't hit the skull at all. Just went through the, you know. How the heck that happened? He said, I don't know. He said, I think it hit my helmet. It hit the little clip on his helmet where the chin strap goes under.
Yeah.
And had gone across his forehead and out the other side of the helmet.
It went parallel to the skull but didn't penetrate it.
Oh, I'll tell you another one. This got me just a little bit. We'd been doing some pretty heavy fighting. We were moving forward. There was a German soldier wounded down in a little ditch like that. So I didn't have anybody I was working on at times. So I went down there, and he was not too badly wounded, but he's lying there. And so I was working on him, and something... I just started to tingle. I looked around up above me, like above the door there. A rifle pointed right down at me like that, and I could see the top of a German helmet. I said to myself, wow, what's happening here? Because we were already going by. I thought maybe he'd just hit out there or something.
You're a sitting duck.
Yeah. So I thought, well, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to get him. We'll get it. So I stood up. His head was down, and he'd been hit and was dead. But that rifle was pointed right at me.
Ooh, that would get my attention, too.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. You try to forget a lot of these things.
And I get that, and I know our listeners do, but I think it's important for us to hear them so we know, so we appreciate the price that's been paid for our freedom, because it's not a small price.
No.
You mentioned getting home and meeting the parents of that Lieutenant Tarbell. Mm-hmm. You also had to meet back up with Millie and meet your baby for the first time. Tell me about that reunion.
Well, that was a high point. People say, what's a high point just as you are? Well, by the time I came across country, taxi cab out the house, I rang doorbell, the door opened, and here stood this. She was always dressed up nice, hair always nice. Here she stood with her little baby in her arms. She looked at me, I looked at her. Little guy put his arms out like that to me. She had our wedding picture, and she said afterwards, she said, I told him every day I'd show him, that's your daddy, that's your daddy. Love your daddy. He was not quite a year old.
Not quite a year old.
He knew who I was. I found out about friends of mine who had been killed. My good buddy I went through college with, he died on a boat. He was going to North Africa to fight over there, and he died of something on the boat. Hmm. Owen Sailing. The American Legion building in Chowchilla is named after him, the Owen Sailing.
Uh-huh. Whatever. When you think about those kind of things, the soldiers that you saw on the battlefield that you couldn't help, that you couldn't do anything for, the people that you knew before the war that you came home and found out they didn't make it home, what did that tell you about yourself and how fortunate you were to be able to come home and see your wife and meet that newborn son who you'd never met before?
Well, I have always felt that the Lord has had me in his hand from the day I was born, because I've gone through things that I cannot explain how I made it. That's the way I feel about it.
I know you mentioned how that doctor who you felt was an angel sent you to the hospital to get the treatment you needed. But I also know it was pretty close to that time that your 71st Division liberated a concentration camp. Were you still with the division?
Yeah, we liberated two of them.
What do you remember about that?
We went into this concentration camp. The dead, they had piles of dead there. They had a trench where they're burying them. They had all, just like you see in the pictures. So the infantry guys were so angry. They were going to go in there's a village. They were going to go and shoot everybody in the village. I said, forget that. It's not the people there. It's Hitler that is doing this. The guys were begging us for food, and we were opening up our cans of C-rations and giving them the C-rations. But as soon as we got past the camp, the rear echelon jockeys came in, and they started bringing food in and all that stuff, you know. But, yes, it was just as bad. The smell was terrible. Yeah, it was not good.
Well, I want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us about it. Is there anything that we didn't hit on you think we need to know?
Oh, yeah, but so there's one. We had to take that village. There was a runway there. Old Patton, I got to tell you one more story about him.
Yeah.
The British were on the north, and they moved slow. They had to stop and have their tea every afternoon at 4 o'clock, you know. And Patton was going. He really wanted to go. So they said you couldn't have gasoline. They stopped the tanks. Can't have gasoline. He went back there. He said, I need gas for my tank. Well, sir, you can't have gas for your tank. We've been told you can't have gas. He turned around to the first guy in the truck. He said, it's just a wire gate. Gate went down. They went in and filled the trucks up. Second time I saw Pat, it was getting towards the end of the war. But it was still pretty cold. So we made do. Well, we didn't have really heavy clothes. We were always cold. So I'd found a piece of fur in a building that had been bombed out. It was about so long, about so wide. So I cut a strip off that. I sewed it onto the collar of my field jacket, had it up around my neck. Well, not much going on. Here comes a Jeep down the road. I saw a flag out in front with three stars on it. Uh-oh, here comes Pat. Well, I was about as far as I hear the window there from the road. So I turned around. I hit an old salute like that, and I stood like that, you know. And he tapped his driver on the shoulder like that, and the Jeep stopped. I'm just frozen in space. He says, soldier, you're out of uniform. Yes, sir, but it sure keeps your neck warm, doesn't it, sir? He laughed. He had a fur collar, too. He said, carry on. Gave me a big smile and said, let's go.
Yeah. I doubt there are too many people who can tell that story. Yeah. Well, I guess the only other question I have for you, and maybe it's not an easy one, I think about your career as an educator and all the things you taught your students and even worked in some of your World War II experiences there. When you think about your children's generation, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and those generations, people who didn't live through World War II, what do you think we all need to know about what happened, why it happened, and what we can glean from it now?
I would be most happy if they seemed to want to know. But they seem to live in their own little world. And some of them don't change much from the time they're 14 until they're 40. They don't seem to want to know.
If they're listening to this, maybe they do. What's important for us to remember about you and those millions of Americans who were over there with you?
Every one of them that was in the Army, they were in for two reasons. Either they were drafted or they volunteered. But they were in the Army. So they had to do what they were told. We learned a lot. The frontline guys learned about combat. The backline guys learned about supply and so forth. They all had a job. Well, all supposed to have a job. The motto in industrial arts was learn by doing. In the classrooms, you learn by listening. People don't listen much now. Well, you learn under duress. I saw the fellows in the Army learn pretty rapidly. Learn by doing. I think the biggest problem we have in our United States is people do not seem to want to learn what is true.
Well, hopefully we all listened and learned enough today to gain a better understanding of the price that has been paid and a little taste of what it meant to be a combat medic in World War II. He's Alan Rasmussen, 92 years old. You can see him in his cowboy hat at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Back next week with more stories from our greatest generation, but we're out of time on the show for today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.